And I think we are live.
Okay.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
As you know, I'm always thrilled to see you. And
Same
I know everybody
here.
else here in our audiences as well. So for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, I'm Angie Atkinson. I just mentioned that. Okay. We do this live stream every Tuesday, usually. And we alternate channels between this channel and Dana's channel, which is called Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. You can also find her at thriveafterabuse.com and at Thrive After Abuse around the internet. Let me say hello in the chat really quick. Come on now. Hello. So that everybody else can type. And there we go. All right. What else? Oh, if you want to be notified of these streams, two things you can do. Number one, first, hit the subscribe button on this channel and over there on Dana's channel, thriveafterabuse.com. I mean, Thrive After Abuse. And also hit the bell notification. I don't know if I'm actually, okay, we're going. Can you hear me, Dana?
Am I cutting out? Yeah.
Okay. Hey, everybody. And the other thing you can do is text the word Angie Live, all one word, A-N-G-I-E-L-I-V-E, or to 33222, or you can text Dana Live, D-A-N-A Live, all one word, to 22999, and we will send you a text before we go live separately or together. All right, so we thought we would talk today about why it is so difficult to end a relationship with a narcissist. What are the things that stop us? What gets in our way? So Dana, do you want to start us off?
Sure. And this, I think, is such a great topic because it causes so much confusion for other people and for the people that are in a relationship. People that are in the relationship are like, sometimes it's the feeling of what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I leave? Or why do I keep going back to this person? And if they're feeling that way, there can be kind of this avalanche of shame and embarrassment just kind of wondering, like, why do I feel so addicted to this person? And then of course, other people, you know, they have the benefit of emotional distance. So they're on the outside looking in, and it's that feeling of, why don't you just leave? Just leave.
Oh, and, yes.
Right. And, or this person's just so awful, you just need to leave. And, you know, then that can cause a whole mixture of emotions within the person as well. So there's so many different factors at work. And so I guess kind of backing up, I would say probably one of the main ones is confusion. Mm-hmm. So it's that confusion over kind of appropriate accountability.
Yes.
Whose fault is it? Who's the problem here? Is it me or is it them? And I think so many survivors feel like it's them.
Yep.
And understandably so, because when you have another person who's blaming you for their behavior, it's like, well, you know what? If you just didn't talk politics at dinner, I wouldn't have gotten so upset and started yelling at you. Or if you didn't forget, my go-to example, if you didn't forget to buy bread at the store, you know, I wouldn't have given you the silent treatment, or I wouldn't have berated you. And so it's this feeling of, well, if I can just quote unquote be better and basically walk on more eggshells, then they'll somehow start treating me better. And so that at the end of it, these relationships, the person's like, man, it's me. I'm just so bad and difficult and kind of unlovable. And there's so many things wrong with me, and that I somehow caused this relationship to end. And it's just heartbreaking when somebody thinks that, when really it's like, no, this person's been abusive. And the reality is everybody can feel angry or frustrated with another person. That's just part of being human, but it's not okay for them to become abusive.
Yeah.
So you didn't cause it. It didn't start with you. It's not going to end with you. That person's behavior, it's a reflection of them.
Totally. Yeah. 100%.
What are your thoughts, Angie?
Well, I absolutely agree with everything you have to say. I know one of the first articles I ever wrote about narcissistic abuse was going through the, you know, why don't you just leave him already thing or leave her already thing? I saw that so often. I heard it so often from people I would try to talk to about the issues. And then on the flip side of that are the practical issues that stop us. Or, well, hold on, let me address a couple more emotional ones. What if he leaves, or what if I leave him or her and then they become better for the next person? Mm-hmm. What if, you know, and the fact, like you said, we really do think it's ourselves. And the way I see it is that I thought it was myself for this one main reason. And that was that I tried to help this person change and grow. But what happened was it was turned back around on me, and I realized quickly that they weren't going to change. So I thought, well, I'll change myself and I'll make myself into whatever this person needs in order for them to not treat me that way, you know, to treat me with love mm-hmm. and respect, whatever. Well, that was terrible. It was the wrong thing. But then on the practical side, which I think is really important to talk about, you know, sometimes we have kids and we either don't have a job because they won't let us, or we can't afford to pay for daycare by ourselves, or all kinds of other financial reasons. Sometimes we're afraid they'll take our kids from us, and sometimes they do, mm-hmm. you know, and there are so many other, you know, especially when your kids are little, it's harder. But I have clients who, you know, don't even necessarily have a money problem, but they fear that, you know, financial abuse is real. Let me just put it to you like that, mm-hmm. that, you know, you can't spend money without accounting for it, or whatever. So there are so many logical reasons, you know, practical reasons people don't go. They don't know where to go. They don't have any support, because narcissists isolate victims. So the longer you've been with a person, the harder it is to go. Then the other side of that is there are a lot of people with health issues, which in my personal opinion, many of those are created directly by narcissistic abuse over many years, mm-hmm. because what it does to your brain and your body. So many different things definitely can lead to making it difficult to end a relationship with a narcissist. And I think the two main ones for me personally were the stuff in my head, which we kind of covered a little bit of here. Mm-hmm. And then the practical, for me, it was money and it was kids. I didn't know mm-hmm. how I was going to do it. And I was scared to death when I finally did it, but I did it. And mm-hmm. I had next to nothing, you know? So anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Thoughts? You know, you bring up so many great points, and kind of the one too about kids is, like you were saying, even if a person has the financial means to leave, mm-hmm. it can oftentimes be that overwhelm of yes. how on earth am I going to raise these kids by myself, mm-hmm. especially if they're young, or even real frankly, even if they're teenagers, you're going to have different issues at different ages, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that feeling of, I can't do this on my own. We can barely even do it with two of us.
Right.
So
And then yeah. on that same token, a lot of times, at least this happened to me, I realized all I really had with that person was an extra body in the house. And what I mean is, sometimes maybe they would allow the child to stay in the house while they stayed in the house, but he did not really allow, he didn't do anything. And that was part of the reason I finally got up the courage to go, mm-hmm. was because I realized he wasn't helping me. He was just being in the house with the baby in the house if I had to go somewhere. And I realized this through a really bad, horrible, I think I told you this before, how I was using cloth diapers because I was trying to be one of those, you know, mm-hmm. really, yeah. Anyway, so I had these special cloth diapers I bought. They had snaps, and only one was different than the other. I had found it like on sale. It was like a natural color, like a brown color instead of white. And it was the only one that I had like that. Well, that morning I had happened to put that particular diaper on the kid. And when I came home 6 hours later, he was still mm-hmm. in the same diaper, so full of all the things babies put in their diapers mm-hmm. that he had diaper rash for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge wake up call for me that I really didn't have a partner in parenting because it was terrible. So yep. It really, yeah, never left my kid with him again after that. But it was still a really, yeah, shocking. So that's another thing parents should think about. If they are, you know, is your partner actually helping? You know, and then there are those people who verbally and otherwise negatively affect the children. Mm-hmm. and most of them do by the time the kids are old enough to comprehend what's happening. So.
Yeah. And you bring up such a great point about getting that clarity in your own mind, because mm-hmm. The anxiety and the overwhelm talking at first, right? It's the feeling yes. of, how am I going to do this on my own? I can't do this. And oh my gosh. And then kind of that realization of, wait a minute, I am already doing this on my own. And not only that, but this other person, it's like taking care of another child, or it's actually more work. And whereas the whatever they're contributing, a friend could help supplement, somebody at church, a neighbor, a family member, their contribution to the household is negligible and can be replaced. It's worth having that peace in my life without the ongoing the battles and everything else.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
and you know, the other thing I hear a lot of, and this is mostly from people who are more established, you know, women over men and women over a certain age, who they've bought their dream house. They are ready. You know, they're like, this is my life now. And they don't want to give up this lifestyle, and yet they can't afford it by themselves. And this happens in both sexes, men and women.
Yep.
You know, and I get it, but part of them, there's this thing that happens to us, especially when we're raised by narcissists, but even when, you know, either maybe they came from a less fortunate background and now they have money, or they always had money and they don't know what they're going to do without money. And mm-hmm. they can't imagine living in a tiny house or a less amazing house than they live in. And so they, you know, sort of trade their sanity for the appearance of a perfect life. And I'm not saying that I would never judge people about that, because I get it on so many levels. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that what a lot of people find is when they do finally just get the courage to make that break, they love that little apartment or that little house or mm-hmm. that free space they have without being constantly treated this way, you know, and having this. I always felt like when my ex would walk into the room, or even my parental narcissist would walk into the room, that the room felt heavier. Like my chest, I could almost feel, especially when they were in a bad mood, I could almost feel this pressure on my body, almost physically. Do you relate to that at all?
Oh, yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize what that was for decades, kind of growing up in a dysfunctional household. I didn't connect that. And I didn't connect why I was in a bad mood, or why I would get so defensive, or why I didn't want to go back and visit, or any of these things. And it took me a long time to realize, oh, this is why. This is, I walk in the door and it's just deeply dysfunctional, and I can't be around. It's just too draining. It's too much.
No doubt.
So yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You bring up another good point too, and that's kind of the difference when there's the challenges, and there's a lot of overlap, but the challenges of leaving a relationship with a narcissistic person who's like a significant other. And then there's the challenges of leaving a relationship when it's a parent, right? When that narcissistic person's a parent, and the self-esteem issues, that's one of the overlaps with them. And kind of the challenges for a person who grows up in a home like that. And Fatima's saying this in the chat too. She says, you know, my family always tells me to not make friends, to stay away from everyone because they'll hurt me, or I won't make it on my own, and that they're the only ones that care.
I heard the same thing growing up.
So when you're kind of indoctrinated with these messages of, and it's very limiting, right? A child kind of by naturally takes on their parents' viewpoints as absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And it's not until we get older that we start to realize, wait a minute, no, this isn't truth with a capital T. This is my parents' truth. And this is a reflection of their own issues and their own unprocessed stuff. And this isn't the way the world works. It's just the way the world works for them.
Yeah.
And, that's a big shift, is kind of separating from that, but that low self-esteem and being told of kind of what's possible for you.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing to try to break away from.
There's no doubt. I actually had that. It's ridiculous and sad, but I did, you know, as I got older, I certainly did make, you know, come up with a lot of my own ideas about things, but there were certain truths that I thought I had inside of me, or that I believed to be true, that I really didn't recognize weren't reality until I was 35 years old. And so I went through, I used to keep asking myself, do I believe what I think I believe? You know, because I realized over the course of several things, I won't go through all of the examples, but several things happened in a short period of time right after I went no contact. In addition to feeling lighter almost instantly, all these things happened. And then I just realized, I don't, you know, I would think about, why did I react that way? Why did I feel this way about that thing? Because it didn't feel good to me. And I was trying to understand what it was. And I realized each time, oh, this is an idea that was put in my head by this person who, you know, raised me and taught me these things. So it was a big eye opener because they, you know, when you're raised by these people, they do tend to kind of still control you when you grow up.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. And I was just having a conversation with somebody about this, like 30 minutes before we went live, and kind of breaking patterns and all of this. And she had some really great feedback and analogies. And she was saying, you know, kind of that default behavior, it's, we're going down that rabbit hole. And it's that limiting belief rabbit hole of what's possible for us. Like, other people are going to hurt us. This will never work out for us. Don't do it. But the thing is, because it's our default behavior, we're not even aware that we're going down a rabbit hole. Or that there's other rabbit holes that we could go down. And so, like what you're saying, that's that first step in changing it, is that awareness of, oh, okay, I am by default going down this rabbit hole of this limiting thinking. And there are other possibilities here. There's other choices that I could make. I can stop and question these beliefs and start, like you're saying, questioning, what do I actually believe? Like, is this true? And what would be a more empowering belief for me to have?
Right.
And then making that conscious choice to go down a different rabbit hole until that becomes more of our default.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. I definitely, yeah. That's the thing, is making that choice. That's where it, that's where we start to change. And it's as Rebecca says in the chat, she said, the worst part is we know this, the reasons that it's difficult to leave. And we understand all this logically, basically. I'm filling in some context because, and she said, but for some reason, we just can't make it to the other side of the door. And I think that's 100% true. I mean, that's exactly, that's some reason is, I think, getting in our heads and everything else we've talked about. But yeah, that's the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah. She also goes on later and says, people judge my situation even more harshly. We don't have children or share bank accounts, property, etc. I've never been in a relationship like this. I just can't walk away. And I don't understand why.
Trauma bond.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. A lot of times when we know we need to leave and we can, we have the means to leave and we don't leave, it's all the things we discussed with the emotions and the feelings and thoughts, but it comes down to that trauma bond factor a lot of times, because you've spent enough time with that person that you've developed that unhealthy connection. You're almost addicted to them and their drama in a way. And it almost feels impossible to walk away. Would you?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's, you know, there's that intensity there, like Angie's, you know, talking about, where it's the, when things are going good, they're going pretty good. And it's this sense of, okay, this relationship's going to continue. We're turning a corner. Things are going to level out, but then boom, the quote unquote bad things happen. They either explode, or you find that they're cheating again, or, you know, whatever it might be. Then it's really low. And then it's all of this uncertainty of, okay, is this, how is this going to, what's going to happen? What's going to happen next, kind of a thing. And then if they come back and they apologize, or things kind of level out, then it's this relief of, okay, things are going to continue. And that level, those highs and lows aren't present in a quote unquote normal relationship, or I should say a healthy relationship.
Right.
And because things can be so high and low, it can create this, it's this level of intensity that people often mistake for love, because they're like, well, I can't stop thinking about this other person. I feel like I'm addicted to them. I, you know, they consume my every waking thought. I check my phone 100 times a day, seeing if they've texted, and I just can't imagine living without them. None of those feelings are love. That's all addictive, under the umbrella of addiction.
Right. And it's those highs and lows that they call intermittent reinforcement, right? Where they give you those crumbs of affection. And then that ends up affecting that same part of your brain that is affected by drug addiction, alcohol addiction, et cetera. So it literally is like you're addicted to them. And so your body almost betrays you, or your brain, you know? Yeah. Yeah. What a mess. Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's see. And here we have an example, sort of this intermittent reinforcement factor. Jennifer says, he messes with my head and tells me he still loves me, but he won't pay child support. Words and actions don't match. It's crazy making. Yeah. This is so common with narcissists, right? I mean, and in a way, you know, the back and forth, messing with your head, then saying he loves you, saying he'll pay child support, not paying child support. You know, it's, so I'm guessing with not paying child support indicates to me that you're out of the relationship, but now you're just dealing with the after effects, which sometimes can be as difficult, especially when you have to be in contact because you have kids, but it's real.
Yeah. You know, I heard, I read, I was going through some of my old notes, the book, The Verbally Abusive Relationship by Patricia Evans. She makes a comment in there that I thought was just so profound. She just summed it up in a nutshell. She said, you know, an abusive relationship is a relationship where words and actions don't match up.
So true.
And that is, it just cuts through so much of that confusion. Yeah. Words and actions don't match up. And that's when we realize, okay, we need to do something different. This is dysfunctional, and it sends a person on a series of highs and lows, and it's a problem.
Yeah. And something I've seen with, you know, choosing to leave or not, is a lot of my clients, I will ask them, what, you know, percentage of the time do you think that you feel happy when you walk away from having spent time with this person? So when you spend, let me make that less confusing. When you spend time with this person, how often do you walk away feeling happy or at least neutral? And how often do you walk away feeling not so good? And what I see is, you know, the longer you're with one of these people, the more bad, the less good you find, right? You still get those little moments of the crumbs, you know, here and there. But they become further and fewer and far further between as time goes on. And then you're just, at that point, you become almost numb. At least I did. Yeah, just get through the days. And then you lose all your interests. And as Dana mentioned earlier, you forget to you become isolated from people. And it's just this whole ugly cycle. Oh, Jennifer adds, her ex tells their child, don't you want mommy and daddy to be together? And their own child doesn't want them to be together. I experienced something kind of similar to that once. yeah. And that's an, you know, if your kid is saying they don't want you to be together, and it's not some sort of, you have to check and make sure it's not a manipulation. But if we're talking about a little child, I don't think that's probably the thing. But in general, if your child doesn't want their parents to be together, that's a pretty good red flag. I mean, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I would also make it clear to the father to leave the child out of it, because that is highly manipulative. It's abusive, and it's damaging to bring a child into a divorce situation like that, because if the child said, regardless of the answer, if you end up doing the opposite, the child most likely is going to take on a kind of a hyper level of accountability. And there's a good chance that they're going to could blame themselves 100%. For what happens. So yeah, I would try to nip that in the bud, and for also sure. Make it known to your child that they don't need, they don't need to get in this, that you'll handle this. I wouldn't say that you and the dad will handle it, because obviously he's not handling it well, but I would just say, you know, this is okay. This is adult stuff. And, if daddy tries to bring you into this, you don't need to, you can tell him that you don't want to talk about this, or that you're a kid, and for him to leave you alone about it.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with that 100%. And the problem is, unfortunately, that when you do tell him that, he may cause other issues. But I think Dana's right. You have to say it. I would document having said it as
Yes.
well. Yeah.
And what's going on? Because
Yes.
that right there, that's that start of parental alienation. It's the
Yes, it
turning,
is.
it's try, it's an attempt to turn, it's triangulating the child. It's putting them in the middle of something that they have no power over, that they don't understand, and that even if they don't want the parents together, it's still scary for them. It's
Yes.
just wildly inappropriate that they're in the middle of something like that. So I would start documenting it, making it very clear that this is, could be considered parental alienation. We need to leave our child out of this. And then when we say document it, putting a date on it. And if and when you do end up leaving, if you do it end up getting a divorce, bringing that kind of stuff up and getting some ground rules, or maybe even asking for some parenting classes,
And
on
maybe
that.
take the kid to counseling in the
And
process in the meantime. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dana.
No, I agree. I think taking the child to counseling and is important, because who knows what else they're saying too.
That's right. I have a comment from, unless you have one, I have one from.
Go for it.
Okay, from Rainbow Vision Art, who says, "I'm not together with my ex, who I think was a narcissist, but because we have a child together, I find myself almost deluding myself that he'll change or still finding him attractive." I think this is another very common issue for people who have been with narcissists, because especially when there's a child, but even when there's not, but especially when there is. Thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, it's hard. Denial, it's denial is what that's called. And Angie and I both recommend people writing out a list of the reasons of why this relationship is not working, and if you're feeling like you need to leave, like reasons why you need to leave. And then when you find yourself kind of slipping back into that self-delusion of, oh, well, maybe you're clinging to hope that's not there. If his behavior has not shown that he has the sincere interest in or the ability for lasting change, then he's far, far away from change.
And
And
I've, yeah, go ahead.
so yeah, just getting very clear with yourself of, nope, this is an actual problem. And then also getting clear with yourself of, okay, at what, where is my line? When do I cut bait and drive on? When is enough enough? Because a lot of people kind of are in that situation where they're kind of in this limbo of, I don't want to give up too soon, but I also don't want to be dragged through hell by holding on to hope. And the only way to get clear, because none of us have a crystal ball, the only way to get clear is to figure out, okay, what kind of damage is currently being done, and how much more damage am I willing to go? Well, how, and then how can I limit this damage? But then also, how much more am I willing to go through before I say enough is enough?
Absolutely. And on a less practical note, I know sometimes looking into the face of your child and seeing their eyes or their smile or something like that makes it harder because you love that kid unconditionally and somehow your brain connects those two people. But it's really important, whether you're missing or not missing that person today, to do your best to separate your child in your head from that person. And I don't mean to say physically separate, I just mean try to keep in mind as your kid gets older, that will become less of an issue. I don't know how old your kid is, but that was always a thing for me, looking in his face and seeing his, I like to say sperm donor, because he hasn't been in his life for a long time, and seeing that other person's face, because my oldest hardly looked like me at all. He has the same coloring, but otherwise he looks just like that person. Oh, and luckily not that person's lack of hair yet. So anyway, but yeah, it's a whole big thing. But Dana, you make incredibly valid points as usual. Do you have another comment for
Oh
us?
yeah, I'm copying and pasting them here as I go.
Right on.
Well, there's kind of just the comment from Dynamite Dill, who makes it says, I'm just really struggling right now. So I guess Dynamite, if you're comfortable sharing what's going on, go for it.
Please let us know.
Yeah. And then the next comment I have here is from YSMY, who says, during an attempt to exit a narcissistic friendship, as you also have been discarded by this friend, she suddenly reached out, starts a fight, and then goes silent again. What should I expect next?
Ooh, you know, that was, in my opinion, that was an attempt at a Hoover in a way. Sometimes they use you as an emotional dumpster. And if you were a safe person to do that with, which it sounds like she believed that you were, then that's what she did. She may have had some other issues in her life and needed to get the crazy out a little bit. A lot of times they play, you know, they wear a mask, or the false self is used with most people in their lives, except for the very few inner circle types, like usually the spouse, the children, and a few friends or family members. What to expect next? You know, repeating the same cycle again and again, usually, I would suggest blocking that person yourself and not letting them affect you again. But I'm sure there's more to the story than I know, but that's my thought. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I guess my thought is to take back your power. So instead of kind of, okay, well, what should I expect next? Like, what are they going to do? Flipping the script and asking yourself, okay, well, what am I going to do? So if this person is coming back and, you know, starting a fight, they go silent again, then cutting off contact and being like, you know what, I'm done with this.
Yep.
But like Angie, so that's what you have control over. You have control over who you let in your life and to what capacity and for how long. And so if this person's toxic, then you can be like, you know what, I'm just done. This is not working for me at all. I'm done. And you don't owe them an explanation or anything. You can just be done. But with that said, like Angie's saying, kind of potentially expecting them that to not go over well with the most kind of quote unquote toxic people have boundary problems big time. So they don't take no for an answer. They don't respect other people's boundaries. There's a very real chance that she'll continue to try to contact you. There's an absolute chance that she's got her own perception of events and is going to be telling other people, kind of starting that possible smear campaign. So telling quote unquote her side of things, which is probably going to leave out everything bad or hurtful that she did to you, or really minimizing it and painting herself as the, you know, the good guy in the situation. So just kind of anticipating that, you might want to reach out to some, if you have mutual friends, letting them know of, gosh, you know what, I just, I don't think I'm going to be talking to Susie Sue anymore. And I really hope that doesn't impact our friendship.
Yeah.
So kind of getting to them before she can.
Yeah. I think that's smart. Yeah. I have this one from Jen Archer where she mentions, what if I leave and I find out it really is all me? That one was hard to get through. And and I know Jen has herself already left, but that was also one of those things for me. And I think I even mentioned it at the beginning of the stream. But I have a weird answer for that. I'm just going to throw it at you really quick. And it's this: think back to when you didn't know that person, if we're talking about a romantic partner or a friend, and ask yourself, have you changed? And if you have changed, it's probably not you. And also, even if it is you, and this person makes you feel that way all the time, or being in the relationship with that person causes you to feel a certain kind of way all the time, or often miserable or whatever, not good enough, etc., then does it matter if it's you? In my opinion, it doesn't. If someone is toxic for you, it doesn't matter if they're toxic for other people or not. Dana, what do you think?
100%. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't matter if they're toxic to other people or if it's just to you. If it's just to you, like, that's enough to get some distance.
Yeah, you're just as important as everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that is a real concern people have, like, well, but what if it is me? Like, what if there are things about me that, you know, like, I don't want to kind of shirk accountability. And what, I could maybe grow from this. Like, if there's really things that are wrong with me. And sure, absolutely. I will say, when you're fresh out, it's very difficult to see the situation objectively. But in time, you can reflect back and kind of think about, okay, kind of what, because there might be like, okay, well, what part, what is there anything I can squeeze out of this? Is there any lessons to be learned here? But then that's kind of that tightrope walking of are these lessons to learn really applicable, or was it just this other person was constantly critical and fault finding and just abusive?
Right.
So, you know.
And I'll tell you something else on the same note. I did learn a whole bunch of lessons about myself in relationships with narcissists, mm-hmm. but I also learned eventually that they were wrong about like 80, 90% of the stuff they said, because what they do is they find one thing that's actually something that might be an issue sometimes, you know, like whatever, let's just say you don't do the dishes. I always use this as an example, dishes. Mm-hmm. You don't do the dishes regularly. So they pick, and they tell you, like, they go 75 levels deep into the insults about what that means about you as a human. Instead of just buying paper plates or doing the dishes themselves, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And so I have personally found, number one, that I will make now, as I'm healed, mostly, I make adjustments or allowances for my little issues. So if the dishes were my issue, I would buy the darn paper plates or hire somebody to do the dishes. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I would not just, you know, I'd probably pay one of my kids or something. They probably should anyway. But, mm-hmm. you know, my point is, yes, we all have flaws. Nobody's perfect. And there might be one thing or two things or a few things that the narcissist has pointed out that are correct as far as things you might want to really change. But you also have to think about the other side of this. And that is that they are so oppressive that you might have stopped doing the usual or the things you would have naturally done because you're so exhausted and mentally, emotionally, and physically. I said it mentally. I just made that word up for you today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I found that to be my issue during relationships with narcissists, where I stop functioning like a normal human and I just kind of exist while they're not with me. And then when they are with me, I am just, they take my energy, you know? And so when I'm not with them, I would feel like, I got to breathe. I got to rest. I can't do anything. You know what I'm saying? Is that just me? Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on if you have a covert or not, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, that's a really great point that you bring up, the lessons learned there. And Angie's absolutely right. You guys, there's dozens, hundreds of lessons that we can learn from this, although it's maybe not in the way that we initially think. So if somebody's been kind of coming at you, like, oh, you're not doing the dishes. You're not doing this. You're lazy. You're a slob. Mm-hmm. I can't believe nobody else is going to put up with you. The lesson from that isn't that you need to get better at doing the dishes or being less of a slob. While there might be some truth in that, like, okay, yeah, you could improve in that area. The bigger lesson is I deserve to be treated with dignity and respect all the time, even if I forget to do the dishes and I'm kind of messy.
All that is true. 100%. Keep talking, baby.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yes. So, and that really is significant. The solution here isn't how can I turn myself into more of a pretzel to make, to avoid confrontation and to make people like me. It's shifting that focus to within, being like, you know what? I matter. Like, I matter and I am worthy of dignity and respect just like anybody else. It's not something that I need to earn. And it's, mm-hmm. it's something that's given because it's a basic human right. And it's the basis of appropriate adult behavior.
Yes. Let me, you know what? I just want to tack onto that. Everything you said is accurate. And mm-hmm. when it comes to narcissists, so often they do play this game with you where you're always trying to measure up to their standards. And if you don't, they punish you by not giving you love or by making you not feel good or whatever. And I'm going to tell you something. Some of them are extreme with this. I have one client who has never even been allowed to call this person who's she's been treating like a partner or a boyfriend or anything like that. This person's only allowed to be called her friend. And she has to keep jumping through all of these hoops or else. And he literally punishes her and tells her, I mean, I think this guy's a psychopath, honestly, but mm-hmm. it's so outrageous the lengths that they will go to and how they sort of condition us and brainwash us, even the most intelligent people, into following these stupid rules and trying to measure up to these stupid, impossible standards. And exactly what Dana said is right. You don't owe anyone any of that. You don't have to measure up to be loved or to be respected. You're worthy because you're a human walking on the planet. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to get approval in that way. You have to be who you are, and so on and so forth, but you can't spend your whole life trying to measure up to a standard that you cannot reach. And I don't mean to say that there's anything wrong with you that you cannot reach that, because many of those standards are bull crap anyway, and nobody could make those people happy. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's why you see multiple relationships with the same narcissist going exactly the same way. And I was fortunate to have the experience of talking to two of my ex-husband's wives that came after me. Now he's on number four. Haven't talked to her, probably won't. But I happened to speak to two of them. And what was ironic is that one of them was like 15 years younger than me. And by the way, he was 8 years older than me. The other one was like 10 years older than me. We were all very different women, but he did the same thing to each one of us. Why is that? Because they don't change. And because it's not us, it's them. That's all I'm saying. All right, moving on.
Yeah. It's and it goes to show you, I mean, here's the reality is, you know, appropriate adult behavior is understanding if we all get frustrated and angry. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if we have appropriate adult boundaries, we're able to filter that to where that frustration and anger comes out in an appropriate way.
Yep.
For people that lack that boundary, then things come out. And oftentimes it comes out with the intention of hurting another person. And that's just wildly inappropriate. It's not helpful. And we all have things that bother us, right? Like nobody's going to live up to anybody's standard. But most of us have realized, hey, you know what? This is more my thing. Like maybe I'm just real particular. Like I do laundry, you know, every 4 days because I don't have kids. So it's me. But I do laundry. I'm kind of particular about that. Mm-hmm. I understand that other people might not be, and that's okay. This is just how I do it. And if I'm in a relationship with somebody and they're not particular about it, then I'm just going to be the one who's going to do it because I don't mind. And that's the thing that I'm particular about. If they're mm-hmm. particular about cleaning the floor, you know, like there's compromise. So there's this understanding of, okay, what might matter for me might not matter for you as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's lacking in a relationship with a narcissistic person is it's kind of their way or no way. And there's that inability to understand that there's different ways of doing things. And, you know, but yeah, but the important lesson there is with boundaries and realizing that, nobody gets a pass for it's worth bringing up. If
right.
somebody is upset and they're frustrated or angry with you and they treat you in a way that you're not okay with, that it's okay for you to assert yourself and say, hey, you know what? I'm not okay with that.
Right. Yep.
And have that conversation.
Yeah. And on that same note, really quick, I noted with my ex, I remember having a conversation with him where I was like, you know, he was like, complaining about something else about me. I don't know. And I said, you know, I've changed this, and this for you, because I understand that couples, you know, they bend and they shape and they kind of grow together. Right. Well, what did you change for me? Because he came into the relationship going, my ex was terrible to me. And so I'm not going to change for anybody. And he sure as heck stuck to that. And so I think it's really, really important to remember this. If you are in a relationship with someone for whom you have changed and molded yourself and grown to help them be more comfortable in the relationship, for example, what Dana said, like, okay, well, I'll just do the laundry then. That's fine. So, you know, but then if her partner was like, okay, well, you can do the laundry, but you also need to do all these other things because I don't like to do it. Well, that's a bad example, but let's say you're naturally a jealous person, or you've become one because your partner makes you feel that way, and you don't feel comfortable with your partner going out to bars with their friends, because bars are where people pick people up and whatever. Mm-hmm. And your partner says, you're stifling me. You're making me feel uncomfortable. Your jealousy issues are not my problem. You should let me go out with my friends. And you go, you know what? You're right. My jealousy issues are not your problem. I should trust my person. By all means, go to the bar. But then 2 weeks later, your friends were like, hey, let's all go out, just us, just the girls or the guys or whatever, and let's go have a girls' night or a guys' night. And you're like, cool, hey babe, I'm going out. And then they're, why would you do that? Are you trying to cheat on me? What's going on? I have seen that 1,000 times. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. So the double standards, it's a big red flag. It's another reason that if there's going to be compromise in a relationship, both people have to change and grow together. Both people have to be satisfied with the outcome, is my point. So, yeah. Okay. Do you have another comment for us?
I do.
Okay.
I was going to say something about the lesson.
Oh,
Oh, yeah. Another big lesson is for those, and I'm sure it's probably a lot of people, kind of rehashing conversations, right? Well, maybe if I had done something different, if I had only, things really kind of went off, took a left turn somewhere, and now we're not talking, and I'm not really sure what happened or how I could have done something different. And, so if it's that kind of thing where you can't quite pinpoint what happened, how things took a left turn, oftentimes the lesson there is that, okay, I need to be in a relationship or a friendship. I need to have people in my life that I can communicate effectively with. So if you're trying your best and more confusion is just further complicating the issue, then it's not you.
That's right.
So sometimes we can't exactly pinpoint it, but all any of us can do at any given time is the best that we can do. So if your best is still like things just keep going off the rails, we're having these circular conversations, nothing gets resolved, then it's time to just get some distance. And then, like I said, the lesson there is, okay, I need to be with somebody that's willing and able to communicate effectively.
And the answer cannot always be, okay, I'll change. It cannot.
Right.
Because
Right.
that's what it was for me for a long time. Okay, fine, I'll change. Fine, it's or just giving up because you're tired. You don't want to fight anymore. Fine, whatever you want. Don't that can't always be the answer, or else it's not okay for you, you know.
That's such a great point, because that's another, and I'm guilty of doing that too, but that's just getting tired of fighting and just being like, you know what, I'm done. But that's a form of shutting the conversation down. It's a form of ineffective communication. But there are times where it gets to that point where you just get so worn out, you're like, nothing's getting resolved. The alternative would be saying, you know what, looks like nothing's going to get resolved tonight. So I think we need to take a time out. Let's pick this conversation back up maybe tomorrow or this weekend. So you're putting a time frame on it. And the issue, realizing that if there's an issue in that relationship, it needs to get resolved. Undiscussed issues don't just go away, they grow. And they grow into resentment, and they come out in all kinds of ways. So
It's
yeah.
true. Yep.
So yes, I
Good.
have some other questions
All right.
here. Okay, so this is from Puffle Mom, who says, if you have CPTSD, how do you avoid becoming a bully and taking your triggers out on your spouse?
Okay. So number one, you need to, I think mindfulness is really important here, mindfulness. But if you find yourself, and I struggle with this, I mean, I don't bully, but I've noticed sometimes in the morning when I running late, and the kids are running late, I get a little upset. And so I have to stop myself. But what I do, and I don't act crazy, I just sometimes get a little yelly, like, come on, what's going on here? What's happening? And then I feel bad. And then I have to, which is so silly. But anyway, so what I try to do is, first of all, I try to always have in my head, I need to care about other people's feelings, which I always do by nature. But in the morning, I'm just a little bit less carry. A little bit cranky in the morning sometimes. And so what I try to do is get up a little earlier and have more time to kind of wake up first if I can. Otherwise, mindfulness and pattern interrupts are useful, but really working through the CPTSD, really working through the day-to-day, the things that are causing you to feel that way, because healing is I think it's almost like a forever process on some level. We all have the ability to find ourselves being triggered. Still me today, I think you too, Dana, a little bit maybe, being having struggling with different issues, like you're triggered by something or someone or something brings a memory to your head somehow, and then you kind of go down the rabbit hole, or or you start a lot of reasons. So if you are struggling with that, then it's maybe important to take a little time out and ask yourself, well, why am I feeling so cranky, or why am I feeling this way? What is happening? What's going on here? And then I think counseling is helpful. And so I know you guys have struggled with that a little bit, but with the counseling thing. But these are things to think about. So Dana, what are your thoughts?
I think you're spot on about mindfulness, and you know, awareness is always the first step. Mm-hmm. And that's so much easier said than done. So it might be something, I know in your relationship, and it's going to depend on the dynamic between any two people. So Huffle, since, you know, Angie and I both know you and Jack mm-hmm. and your relationship, you guys have that ability for open, honest, sincere, solutions-oriented communication. So in that situation, I would encourage you to have to set aside, maybe and possibly on an ongoing basis, if you have the time or the desire, but at least once a week, once every 2 weeks, ideally at least once a month, where it's the two of you mm-hmm. kind of doing a kind of post-game day analysis of your relationship. Okay, what worked well this month? What were some of our challenges? In what ways could we improve? This is really helpful, especially after a disagreement. Of, okay, how did we handle that? Mm-hmm. And what could we have done different? And do you feel like things are resolved? Is there anything else that we still need to discuss? Waiting a couple of days so that there's not so much of that emotional reactivity that's still there, that you're able to view it in a more neutral, solutions-oriented place. Mm-hmm. But with the CPTSD, talking to each other about, okay, what are some of the ways that this CPTSD manifests itself in my life according to you, and then asking Jack according to him mm-hmm. and I would encourage him to do the same. And what are some of your triggers, and what are some things that you've noticed that have helped, and what are some things that you've noticed over the years that haven't helped mm-hmm. or that each other does, or that when life, like Angie was mentioning, you know, kind of working under a time crunch, or when things are stressful, she gets really flustered. I am the exact same way. I just realized this about myself, that it really sets off, it really radically negatively impacts my mood mm-hmm. for days. And it creates all this anxiety. And I realize I have to allow for enough, a nice buffer of time on things, mm-hmm. because if I start getting flustered, I just spiral.
Yeah.
So kind of knowing these things about yourself is a great start. So yeah, what the triggers are, what your partner thinks the triggers are, what they do, what you do, what each of you are at this point willing to do differently.
Yeah. And I think another thing that might be helpful for the mm-hmm. two of you specifically is maybe if you feel that you're going to argue, or if you are arguing, maybe you two step away from each other and you take a few minutes and write back and forth, or have a shared notebook back and forth where you can write your thoughts down. Because sometimes if we write it down first and we read it back, we realize, holy crap, that's mean. I shouldn't say that. You know, not that I'm saying you guys are mean to each other, but I'm just saying mm-hmm. Things like that, or wow, that's kind of gaslighting. You guys are both educated about this particular topic, so just something else to think about. Real quick, Dana, we have a super chat from Luke mm-hmm. Minya, hello, who says, yeah, you are live and I caught you live. I love you, ladies. Thank you. Big hugs and we appreciate you. Yes. All right.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Oops. Now I just lost my place in chat, but what do you got for us?
Okay. Okay. This one might be for next time, because it's okay, let's do a smaller one, and then let's start maybe next week with this one comment. Okay, so Jennifer makes the comment, they give false hope that they will change or want to paint this family dynamic. It's twisted and horrible. I feel like I can't full healy since I can't get away. So I guess that's more of a comment than a question, but yeah. Thoughts about that?
So she said she can't fully heal because I think I missed part of it. Can you read it to me one more time? I'm so sorry.
Sure. She says they give false hope that they will change, or they want to paint this family dynamic. It's twisted and horrible. I feel like I can't fully heal since I can't get away.
I get that. And this could be the case with somebody you're in a romantic relationship with, or even a family member in this case, Or even a friend in the right circumstances. Yeah. So I think that is exactly what holds us, a lot of us back is being this feeling of like I was always told, no matter what, I always got your back by my parent. And then my parent tried to have my children taken from me. And so it's this whole process. Yeah. So my point is that vision that they give us that, okay, we're a family, family stays together, family's back, got families back, whatever. That should be the case. But unfortunately, there are so many toxic families who are literally causing people to be physically and mentally ill with the abuse that they're doling out, even as you're an adult living in your own home sometimes. And so I think it's just really important to recognize that as much as I would love that to be the truth, it just isn't the truth all the time. And so you have to be okay with it. It's not okay with. You have to be prepared to choose between your sanity and their illusion, I guess. And that sounds harsh, but you have to be able to say, you know what? I need to be sane. I need to not die of a heart attack or go crazy because this person is continues to abuse you. So Dana, I'm sure you're more organized with your thoughts about
Nope.
that. What do you think?
Don't know if I'd go that far, but
Well,
it's really difficult to heal, if not impossible to heal, if you're still in that environment that's making you
truth.
sick.
Yes.
And but with that said, carving out moments as many as you can to get peace back into your life where you can have a sense of calm and where you can just breathe is incredible, is important, is really important. And in getting clear on, okay, like you said in your own words, they give false hope that they will change or they want to paint this family dynamic. Okay, so like we were talking about before, awareness is always the first step. You've gone around this mountain quite a few times now, and you realize this is what they say. They give false hope that they'll change and they paint this really wonderful family dynamic. These are the carrots that they're dangling in front of you. And so there comes a point where, in order for things to change, you're going to have to start seeing the carrots in front of you as carrots, and that you're never that it's you're not going to reach them because they don't really exist. It's a mirage. So kind of getting clear on, okay, where's my line? When is enough enough? And when do I need to go?
And just an insightful comment to add to that from Anja. She says, and I'm sorry if I said it wrong, but I appreciate you. I see you in my comments all the time. Says, victims know how it could be when narcissists stop pretending something they don't be, stop pretending to be something they're not. Dealing with reality isn't something narcissists like, and that's the problem. Isn't that insightful?
Very.
Yes, yes. Anyway,
I
love
mean, the
that.
reality, we all have this fantasy of this ideal person that we want to be.
Of course.
And we want to lose weight. We want to write a book. We want to wake up earlier in the morning. We want to start working out. We want to, longer hair, shorter hair. What we all want. The thing is, wanting is not enough.
Yes.
Wanting isn't the same as action.
That's right.
And the only so talk of change is common. We all engage in it, but talking about change isn't the same as actual doing the work of change.
That's right.
And so they might be caught up in their own fantasy of what they think is possible for them, but that doesn't mean that you need to be caught up in it. So once you realize, you know what, they keep saying this over and over, things aren't changing, they're that all that means at the end of the day is they're not ready, willing, or able to change. And so all you can do is respond, is kind of quote unquote meet them where they are and being like, okay, this is where this person is. So I need to be the one to do something different. And holding on to hope that they'll follow through when there is no plan for them to follow through and there are no action steps taken towards that plan, that's not a good plan.
Right.
They're still in the fantasy. I'm hooked on hope, and that's not going to go anywhere.
That's right. On that same note, here's an example of I see people idealizing their partners, and sometimes more so than others. For example, and I can't remember what the actual word was that his therapist used. One of my clients was also working with a therapist, of course, and the therapist said, and I can't remember the word, but it was basically idealizing. He was over-idealizing this woman because he had initially met her in college, and then many years later, they got together and they dated, and he really liked her in college, so it was almost like he was that guy again who actually got the girl this time. You know what I mean? So there was this fantasy in his head about who she was, and she turned out to be a narcissist. And so there was this ongoing like cognitive dissonance for him because she was this mysterious, gorgeous girl that he knew in college, and now they were in their 50s. And he was still sort of seeing her as that elusive girl that wouldn't date him in college. And now she's all, you know, still beautiful, still gorgeous, still amazing, but also a narcissist and treating him like dog crap, pardon my language. And it took him a long time. And I think he still struggles here and there, and it's been several years. So, I mean, he did end the relationship painfully. Well, she did, but he stayed away, which I was very proud of him for, but it's a very difficult thing to take that when this can be the truth with somebody you've dated or somebody in your family, again, with this idea that they have of like we were talking about, your family sticks together or whatever. In this case, for him, it was a, you know, this old goal, I guess, that he had that he got to finally do or whatever, but it wasn't true. The illusion he had of her for all these years was not the person he ended up with. And this is the same, exactly what you just said. I was just sharing an example of a similar situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so. And that's a good point. I mean, the reality is it's easy for any of us to get caught up in that fantasy. Our brain fills mm-hmm. in the gaps. And if we're not aware of that, our brain does that, we're always creating stories about the world around us, about other people, and kind of based on the information that we have about what is kind of our truth about the situation. I had the same thing happened. I had a crush on a guy when I was in junior high, and we ended up dating when I was in my early 20s. And, and then I realized, we were going for a walk one day, and I'd made a comment, "Oh, I had the biggest crush on you in seventh grade." And he's like, "Well, yeah, but look where you are now. Like, you have me on your arm." And it was this light bulb moment of this realization of, oh my gosh, realizing this is this guy today. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of issues. And I broke up with him shortly after that, because it was like, oh my gosh, no, I've been the seventh grade me was the one that was showing up in this relationship. I was so giddy to, you know, go out with him, but obviously he was not the same person. I wasn't the same person. And it was that stark that getting snapped back into reality. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I gotta go. Like, this isn't at all what I'm looking for. And
exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Totally. And on that, you know, on that same note, well, slightly different note, real quick, because I know we're out mm-hmm. of time, but do you mind if I grab one more question?
No, not at all.
Got time? Okay. Adrian says, question, have you guys ever felt like it was, wait a minute. Have you guys ever felt like if you tell someone what's really going on behind closed doors, they won't believe you? That's how I feel. Nobody won't believe me. So I stayed silent. That is, yeah, I felt, I felt embarrassed about what I was putting up with because I believed myself to be a strong woman. And I also was concerned that I didn't think that nobody would believe me. I thought that they would think I was being petty because it's very difficult to explain emotional abuse to someone who hasn't experienced it. If you think about it, you know, for example, a dog whistle could be, and when I say dog whistle, I mean a situation where somebody abuses you in front of other people and you don't know, or other people don't recognize it, but you do. Okay. So for example, if this person always flirted with people by saying, like my ex used to say something like, I would say, I'm sorry. He would say, you're going to be. And that was a flirt, right? Mm-hmm. Ew. But anyway, he did this to me in a room full of people talking to another female who was my best friend. You're going to be. And I was instantly, my head blew up, and I had to control myself because I was well conditioned at that point not to act crazy, but I still felt crazy. And even though it was a legitimate, whatever. I mean, he was flirting with my best friend in front of me, and nobody knew but me. That's the point. And it was a dog whistle. So meaning, yeah. Why am I telling you that, Dana? I just got distracted. Oh, because again, had I said to someone just that, you know what, my ex said this phrase to my friend, that doesn't sound like abuse, but that's not talking about all the things surrounding that and what would in the relationship led up to that point that I would feel so hurt and angry when he did that in front of me, in front of this room full of people. Does that make sense?
A
Because there were
hundred
also,
percent.
yeah.
It's that, I think that's it for a lot of people. Either it's so extreme that it just sounds like that doesn't happen in real life, right? And just so over the top, or it sounds really, really so small that it's just, oh, you're being petty. And oftentimes what happens when we do share things like that, oh, it was the way that this person did this, or the way they looked at me, or kind of more subtle things. Other people oftentimes start trying, for whatever reason, start trying to justify it. Well, maybe, they didn't really mean that, or maybe they had an off day, or gosh, and it's all kinds of these beliefs that we're all walking around with, if, but we're not aware.
That's right. Are you still with me? One of us just disappeared. I don't know which one. Dana, can you hear me? Okay. Guys, if you can hear me, please let me know. Oh, there she is. Okay. Dana, are you there?
They're can hear you.
You can. I don't know. It's going real slow for me. I think it must be me. I'm still here. Okay. Okay. Dana froze. Okay, good. Okay. Woo, because I was like, am I talking to myself? Okay. Dana's frozen. Are you still frozen? She looks still frozen. All right. So I'm just gonna wrap up. I think we were just about done anyway. So yeah, she does have the most beautiful smile, does she not? I totally agree. Love me some Dana. Okay, since Dana is frozen, I am going to. Can you hear me, Dana? No, are you there? Okay, you were frozen
I
for a
can
little
hear you.
while.
Yes.
Okay, you're back.
Okay.
Okay,
Good,
all
good.
right. Okay, I don't know if anybody heard what you said. I think you might have been frozen for a minute. No, you were frozen. Okay, anything else you want to share before we wrap up for today?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember what we're talking about. I know something about kind of things being, oh, I was talking about when things are so small, that seemingly small and hard to pinpoint, that it can be we can run into the justifications from other people, and we can run into the justifications from ourselves, thinking, oh, well, things could always be worse, or I shouldn't compl I have nothing to complain about because other people have had it worse, or even I have nothing to complain about because I've experienced worse, or things aren't that bad. Nobody's perfect. I need to forgive and forget. All of these messages can really keep us stuck. And the reality is, all of it's a big deal. If you're being mistreated, it's a big deal.
Yep,
So.
100%. Yes. And again, sorry if I was interrupting you. I couldn't hear you, and I
No,
didn't know
that's
if it was
okay.
me or you. But thank you. I appreciate you. Okay, are you ready to wrap up for right now, Dana?
Yes. And
Okay.
I just wanted to say the question that I think we should cover next time, Ange, is from Sarah Goodenough, who says, can you guys talk more about the differences between healthy and unhealthy relationships? I'm
Ooh.
dating a very calm older woman and getting used to calm daily love in the early days.
Love that. Yes, I'm into it. So that's what
Okay.
we'll talk about on your channel next week, right?
Sounds like a plan. Yes.
Okay, so wrapping up, here's what we'll do. For those of you who are new around here, we do this stream every Tuesday, usually, and we alternate channels. So this week we're over here on my channel. Next week we'll be over on Dana's channel, which is called Thrive After Abuse here on YouTube. And the lovely and talented Huffle Mom, one of our awesome Mod Squad. Thank you, Mod Squatters, for being here today. Jen, Jack, and Huffle Mom, I think, are the ones I saw today. Appreciate all three of you. If you would please take a look at the chat, Huffle Mom will be giving you all the 411 about how to get in touch with us, but I'll really quickly run over it with you. If you want to subscribe to this channel, hit the bell notification. Subscribe to Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse, hit the bell notification. You'll be notified of live streams that way. But since YouTube can be a little glitchy with the notifications. We also both have text systems where we send you a text each time we go live. So in order to be notified of both, you can text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222, or Dana Live, all one word, and or to Dana Live, all one word, to 22999. I suggest you do both. That way you can get our together and separate streams. And Helpful Mom's got it all right there in the chat for you. So thank you guys. Thank you, Dana. I appreciate you.
And thanks for having Squad, me.
Yeah. My pleasure. My pleasure. We both appreciate Mod Squad. Thank you guys for being here, our moderator team. And any final words for them today?
I guess just that reminder, you guys matter. Yes. Your boundaries, it's you deserve to be treated. You are worthy. I'll put it this way. You're worthy of being treated with dignity and respect. It's the basics of appropriate adult behavior. It's the basics of human rights.
Yep. And you're worthy right now, no matter what. Yeah. Don't forget.
Yes. 100%. I love that.
All right. See you next week, everybody. Okay. Thanks, Dana.
Bye, guys.
You too. Bye. Now I have to find it.